You are listening to the Leukomania Pop Culture Podcast. Is brought to you by CheapGraphicNovels.com, where you can purchase your favorite trade paperbacks and hardcovers for up to 45% off cover price.
How's it going, everyone? Pat Loika here. You're listening to a bonus episode of Leukomania. Today I'm joined by a podcasting rookie who is – actually, he's a friend of the show. He is a writer also, like myself and pretty much everyone who has co-hosted the show. And I figured it'd be a kick to – it'd be fun to have him on because he's like me, he's a big fan of our guest. First, let me introduce you to Mr. Travis Holyfield. Welcome to the show, Travis.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Yeah, this is your first time here, and I have to say you did pretty good. Yeah, I mean you're filling in on the footsteps of giants like Adam Witt and Antonio Cuneo as my
Adam Witt is only 3 feet tall. I don't know about filling in the footsteps of giants.
Oh, I don't know, man.
He's positively wee.
Oh, I don't know, man. That guy fights like a giant, so I would be very careful.
He's only 3 feet tall, but he's 22 feet of man. I'll tell you that.
Oh yeah, he definitely is. But today we have, as I mentioned, we have our special guest, Mr. Matt Fraction, making his return as a full-length guest. And, since the last time Adam and I had him on, a lot of stuff has happened. Like, Fear Itself, took place, and lots of fallout from that to deal with. We talk about Fear Itself in this interview. We talk about the tie-ins that he did, like Iron Man and, of course, Thor. And we also talk a little bit about Defenders. We spend quite a bit of time with his Marvel stuff because there's just so much of it coming out. And
Because once I start geeking out about Defenders, it takes me about 25, 30 minutes to calm down. So
it's okay because you know what? A lot of people, I don't think there's a lot of information that has been divulged about the Defenders yet. And hopefully by the time you guys listen to this, the book isn't out yet. So you guys will kind of have like this will be kind of a teaser. But yeah, I mean, Matt, of course, is fun. I love his honesty. I love how he talks about the work and the thought process behind certain decisions that were made. You know, like the point one, point two, and point three issues of Fear Self, for example. You know, we kind of find out the story behind that, the story behind the way they decided to kill off Bucky. And there's a lot of things that we learn here, and it's just it's interesting. And if if you're a fan of the Fear Itself stuff, you would dig it. If you're not a fan, you would at least get a little bit of insight as to how they operated with this with this particular event. So I think there's something here for everyone. And of course we talked about Defenders, which is launching soon, and Casanova, which is one of my favorite books right now, one of the most one of those amazing books out there. So we got to talk about everything that Matt's been working on. And as far as you're concerned, Travis, what about the interview stood out for you?
Well, I'm proud of myself for not just completely geeking out too badly and not doing what I told you I was going to do, which is kind of pull that Farley thing where I'm just like, remember that one time? That was awesome. I'm also very excited that the first person to say boner was not me.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of that here, but it's totally fun. Matt has always been one of the funniest guys we've had on, and he's always been, and he's always been very accommodating. So I appreciate the fact that he spent over an hour actually talking. So quite a bit in this show. Of course, this show is sponsored by our good friends at CheapGraphicNovels.com, where you can pick up many Matt Fraction titles, particularly his run of Invincible Iron Man, soon you can pick up a copy of the Fear Itself hardcover, which is also coming from them. And of course, if you want to look for his indie stuff, they got the two Casanova collections, Gula and Luxuria, all at 45% off. You can't go wrong there. And of course, you can also find his older stuff like Five Fists of Science from Image, also for them. So be sure to stop by our pals over at CheapGraphicNovels.com. And when you order at the comment section, tell them that you heard about them through us, because that's good for us. Of course, Travis, where could people find you online?
Let's see. They can find me on the Twitters, which is Travis Holyfield, all one word. And then I have a website if they want to hear about my blogginess, which is travismholyfield.blogspot.com.
Fantastic, sir. Of course, people can find me online at about.me/patloika, and that will take you to pretty much all my social networking. And of course, I wanted to specifically mention Twitter, twitter.com/patloika. And you could find me on you find the show on iTunes, where you could leave us a review if you will be so kind to do so. A review would actually increase the awareness of the show on iTunes, and it would just be good things for us, you know. So please, if you're digging the interviews, if you've been digging the you know, the recent interviews we did with Mike Carey and with Kieran Gillen, or any of the older stuff we did, like with Rick Remender, which is probably still one of my favorite episodes. Stop by iTunes, leave us a review. We would really appreciate it. We have a lot of cool guests coming up over the next month. Among other things, we will have the return of Jason Aaron, and we will have a few more special guests that I'm not going to talk about just yet. But, stay tuned and keep, you know, be sure to subscribe to the show, because a lot of fun stuff coming your way. So, again, thank you all for listening. Thank you, Travis, for taking the time to do the show with me this week.
Thanks for having me, man.
Oh, you're welcome. This is not going to be the last time. And, of course, thanks, everybody. You guys take it easy, and, of course, continue to buy the books that you love, and continue to talk about the books that you love, because that's how this industry gets better. You talk about what you love, and don't be hating. So you guys take it easy. We're back, and this time we are joined by our first returning full-on guest, Mr. Matt Fraction. Welcome back, Matt.
Nice, please. How's it going? Thanks for having me back on again.
Yes, this is kind of overdue, because there's been quite some stuff since the last time we had you on. I mean, last time we had you on, Fear Itself hadn't even started yet. You know, it was about to come out, and we've been kind of anxious to talk about it, but now it's all said and done, and we kind of want to talk about that for a little bit. That was a really, really fun book, and I think out of all the event books I've seen in a while, it probably had some of the best tie-in books that it ever came out to.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And I loved a lot of the tie-ins ranging from the Avengers stuff, of course, to even the X-Men stuff that Kieran Gillen was doing.
Yeah.
The coordination, of course, is probably something else. How much of an influence do you have on the actual tie-in releases and what you guys were working on at?
I had very little. It was really all praise to Tom Brevoort and his office in this case. I mean, I sort of would suggest on occasion, like, where things could happen, like where there was room for tie-ins and stuff. Oh, hey, I'm not going to do this part, or hey, this could be a fun part, stuff like that. But yeah, it was a really Tom's to play with. You know what I mean? It was Tom's to grow and figure out. He was the one that kind of had the macro view. But like in cases with like Kieran and I worked together on the Asgard stuff in Journey, and he kind of, you know, he had to kind of navigate around the ending, and he had to kind of know where things were going. So Kieran and I work with each other quite a lot, and there's a bit where Journey into Mystery and Fear Itself link up, where you see events, the event from like the events of Fear Itself were happening in the background, and a bit of Journey into Mystery, and a bit of Journey into Mystery is happening in the background of Fear Itself. If you know where to look, there's like a secret panel where it all links up. So it's fun. But by and large, I mean, I wanted to leave as much wiggle room and red meat on the table as possible for the tie-ins. So poor Atuma, like hardly got any stage time at all in Fear Itself proper. We didn't even see him get his hammer, for example. But that left for the tie-in books to do. There's a couple, you know, we didn't see all of them get their hammers up. We didn't see Absorbing Man get his, you know, we saw him after he got it, but we didn't see him actually getting it. And that was, I think, God, it's been like 8 months now, so I'm kind of forgetting, but I think that was, Iron Man 2.0. I think that was one of the Nick Spencer tie-ins, stuff like that. So yeah, I wanted to leave a lot of red meat for folks, and yeah, I'm glad you dug it. All praise to Tom having the editorial eye in the sky on that score.
I think the red meat you left really shows too, because there's books that I already thought were spectacular that with the tie-ins just kind of became amazing. Like Avengers Academy was a book that I was really enjoying, and then all of a sudden the Fear Itself stuff came out.
And Christoph just fucking crushed it, didn't he?
Killed it. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. That guy is really something special. But yeah, like when I first started to work at Marvel, was during Civil War, and like that was so tightly coordinated, you know, I had to like walk between raindrops practically. And there were pages that kept getting redrawn because Civil War would change, and you know, that's fine. That's a fine way to do it. And it was like a great learning experience, and kind of being thrown into the editorial deep end, you know. But it was. I figured if I was only going to get one shot at doing an event, I would try to make it as insane as it sounds, as collaborative and open source as possible, and let people fill in as much as they wanted, and whether or not we were entirely successful certainly can be debated endlessly. But we wanted the tie-ins to grow the story. We didn't want them to just extend it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, we would have tried something different. I think everything about the event was different. So why not the tie-ins too? Why not just be completely and entirely difficult?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I really liked about the event is because, you know, I mean, over the last few years with Marvel, you know, Marvel events, there is always this element of paranoia and mistrust among the good guys. Here, the good guys are being good guys, and they're clearly the good guys, and we have a clear bad guy right in front of us.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's there's this sense of unity among the you know, the good guys that we haven't seen in a while in an event. So I thought that was really cool, and that's probably one of the reasons why it really stood out for me, because like, hey, you know what? They're just doing their thing. There's no, hey, I don't trust you or I don't want to fight with you type of thing, you know.
Yeah.
I thought that was, you know, I thought it was great to see that, and I was really, you know, and it made all the, you know, it made seeing all the characters together seem really special, because you haven't really seen them all team up like this in a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, with regards to that, though, was there anything in particular that you had to address? I mean, was this something that was mandated by editorial, or was this your decision to think, hey, you know what, we'll just go straight up, have the good guys be good guys? Or
yeah, I mean, no, it was sort of what the story was. You know, the Fear Itself started with Tom Brevoort calling Ed Brubaker and myself and saying, you know, you guys are always talking about wanting to work together. You know, we have a Thor movie in May and a Cap movie in July. Do you guys maybe want to try and do a little Cap Thor miniseries? And that was like, it was like, oh, we'll do like a 6-issue fun little summer thing. And it ended up not working like that for any number of reasons. But the root of the idea of, where do you find an intersection between Cap and Thor? Like, let's make Cap and Thor the centerpiece heroes of this event. We've done a Cap and Tony one. Let's do Cap and Thor. You know, it was kind of based on Hitler's real life obsession with Norse mythology and magic. And there really was a Thule Society. I mean, if you've read Hellboy, you know about the Thule Society. I mean, that was like, Mignola didn't make that up. That was, you know, Hitler was, you know, gaga for all things Norse. And so it just seemed, oh, great. What if the Red Skull? And then it all kind of spilled out of there. And it was Joe then Quesada who heard the kind of pitch for that mini and said it sounded more like an event to him than just a miniseries, and then we were off to the races. So, just the nature of the event and where we were in the story, you know, I kind of got fond of shorthanding this as saying it was the crucible for the heroic age. You know, we had put that banner in a lot of places and shown a lot of covers with a lot of statues and a lot of posing, but let's now really give them a threat to deal with. And one that doesn't have an antecedent, one that doesn't have, Oh, Kang is back. Especially because Brian just did such an amazing Kang story. But you know what I mean? Like, it was just sort of like, let's do something entirely new where people who might be hearing about these characters for the first time from the movies can come in and plug in and just pretty much follow it from the first issue. And that meant an entirely new villain, an entirely unknown villain, an entirely unknown threat. And starting our heroes off on a familiar position where they already were. So,
Fantastic. I thought, you know, as far as, you know, what you guys set out to accomplish, I thought you guys were pretty successful with it. Of course, you know, the story went on. We did have casualties, particularly Bucky. The story we've been hearing is that I think Ed Brubaker gave you the ending to, I think it was issue 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So how did that particular aspect of the story come together? Because, you know, Bucky was really getting, you know, a big following. People were really into the
Sure, movie. Sure.
And you guys pretty much killed him off right at the height of it.
Well, we, you know, I had said everybody loves the Winter Soldier, like myself included. Like, everybody loves it. It is the defining thing of Ed's run. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They used to make shirts that say, you know, rule number one, Bucky stays dead, right?
Yeah.
So it Bucky wasn't going to make it out of Gulag. Like, that was the end of Ed's Cap tale. It was going to end in June, and then July, when the movie, there was going to be a new number one. That was going to be when Steve put the costume on. It was going to be Steve Rogers again. So for literally years, as long as Ed and I have been talking about this stuff, I've told him that, you know, that when he's done with Bucky, the Red Skull has to kill him. And if the Red Skull killed Bucky, then that's it. He's written this single-handedly. They put it like he's done for Cap what like Frank Miller did for Daredevil. Like, that's the run that will never ever be beaten, right? That if it ends with the Red Skull killing Bucky again, and I know ostensibly it was Zemo, but it's, you know, mm-hmm. Stan says no, it was on Red Skull's orders. The Red Skull was the one responsible for Bucky's death. Anyway, if it was bookended, if the Red Skull killed Bucky again, there you go. But now, you know, he's done away with the Red Skull, and we had he was working on building up Sin as the new Red Skull. And she was our villain in Fear Itself. And we're talking and I'm outlining one of the things I wanted to do for Cap is we've never got to see him fight a war on American soil.
That's right.
You know what I mean? It was always World War II. It was always overseas stuff. But So we never had to defend the homeland. There hasn't been one since, you know, the war of 1812, whatever. So, or I guess the Civil War came after that, didn't it? Oof, man. Need to drink some more tea, wake up a little bit. that was embarrassing what just happened. Please use your digital technology to make me not sound like a high school dropout right there.
I'm going to just let you know that, honestly, I was going with it. I had no idea until you stopped and said something. So
Yeah. The War of 1812, and then 50 years later, Civil War. And then, what was the one Spanish? What was the one when the British burned the White House?
Oh, man. My history's all screwed up.
Part of my problem is you said Civil War, and I immediately flashed back to, Cap and Iron Man are fighting.
It was the War of 1812. Okay, the British sacked Washington in 1812. All right, good. All right, so I'm not totally...
You're doing fine.
All right, good. I've got two kids now. It's sort of a... I can feel the IQ points just kind of getting... just lathed off of me, just kind of like someone's taking a big planer of stupid and just shucking off IQ points.
But in a few years, they'll be old enough to be in school, and they'll be coming home and being like, "Well, Dad, you know about the War of 1812? You'd be like, tell me all about it."
I don't. You know, like my dad used to be like a super like techie dude. You know, like our clocks never blink 12. He was that kind of dude. And then there clearly came a point where he just stopped caring. I don't know what this is. Like, he doesn't care about anything anymore. Like, I get that now. I totally get that. There's just gonna come a point where, like, I just do not care. Anyway, so I was kind of saying, this is, you know, Blitzkrieg USA. We're gonna see Sin demolish Washington D.C. and it's, you know, we need to see Steve Rogers reacting to our capital being attacked by a foreign military.
Yeah.
And this is where, you know, we're going to blow up the Washington Monument. We're going to crack the Capitol Dome. We're going to do all this stuff. And if someone's going to die, this would be a good first act break place for that to happen, where the stakes really get clear. And we realize this isn't just about knocking over the Legos. We're losing characters here. We're losing people. And Ed just kind of said, maybe this is where the Red Skull finally kills Bucky. And I dove on it as though it were a hand grenade. And would not let him, and immediately called no take backs. And that was it. And so he kind of gave me that gift. That said, we're recording this on the evening of November 1st, Wednesday, November 2nd, Fear Itself 7.1 is released. Do not miss that book. It is Ed doing Bucky's funeral and memoriam, and it is one of the best things he's ever written. And it's an absolute must for fans of his Cap run or for fans of Bucky. So make sure you check that out tomorrow. That's it. So that chapter has not yet quite been closed on Fear Itself, but stay tuned. And Ed is going to send them off in style tomorrow.
Now, my question is it so much that you jumped on it, or was that Ed kind of sliding in that, oh, maybe this is a good place to kill Bucky because he doesn't want to be that guy who's killed Cap twice?
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. That was the other thing too, was like, he wasn't even nervous about it. I think too, cause he knew that I was going to get the heat. It was very funny. Like, Ed was like, I've already been through this once.
I've already been through this once. Be
Ed way of doing it. So yeah, maybe so. But you know, he gave it to us, and I am forever grateful for it.
Fantastic. I look forward to reading that issue. On that note also, I thought it was interesting that you guys decided to, probably not your decision, but you know, that Marvel decided to do like the 0.1, 0.2, and 0.3s after number 7. Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting because it looks like the emotional fallout of what happened in the books will be taking place there.
Yeah, yeah.
And you guys kind of kept the main event itself, just the pure action, the whole event part of it, in the first 7 issues.
Yeah. You know, and a part of it, you know, and it's not my department, but you know, they didn't want people to miss it, and they thought that if we were going to call it Shattered Heroes 1, 2, and 3 or whatever, or Shattered Heroes Cap, Shattered Heroes Iron Man, whatever we were going to call it, they were worried that people wouldn't pay attention to it if it wasn't called Fear Itself.
Oh yeah,
and it's such a huge. It's the 3 books are so huge, aside from just being emotionally important to the characters, like the stuff that spins out of them, the things that happen here are massive. Ed and I just happened to find ourselves in a place where the next foreseeable futures of our books lined up right at the same time. So we were able to turn these issues into closing chapters in a lot of ways, but opening chapters in a lot of other ways. So they're more than just let's stand around and talk about what this all means. big stuff comes out of all of them.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I've been hearing a lot of buzz about the Cap book already because people have been receiving books early for some reason.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, there's already some buzz over it online today, like all over Twitter, and I'm assuming because the retailers get them first and they're kind of reading through it already. So I hear a lot of good things.
What are they saying?
Well, a lot of positive buzz about it. I've seen way too many people saying that was great. This is the part that we're looking forward to, and all that stuff. I'm like, okay, fine. I look forward to it. You know, it's kind of funny because with the Tuesday shipping for most stores, you know, it's. A lot of people tend to get the drop on all of us now, as far as getting advanced books. So it's good to hear all the positive word on it right now. So yeah,
well, yeah, and you know, especially since like so much of our book got spoiled.
Oh yeah,
In headlines on one site in particular. Mm-hmm. Whereas, God forbid you not click through 7 barriers before you find out a single thing about Flashpoint. We got blown in headlines the whole summer long. So if there's anything left to be enjoyed and it's staying quiet tonight, that is I am thankful for that tiny, small favor.
Yeah. No, I've got Twitter up in front of me here, and I've got 3 or 4 places where it's just saying, do not miss 7.1. Yeah.
And that's why we called it. That's why we, now I'm taking credit for it. Now that sounds like a great idea. Now it's we, Marvel knew in their wisdom, as silly and ridiculous and weird as it might sound, these are more than just times, you know, more than just, you know, boy, that sucked issues. These are really big stories. The Thor one is massive, and the Iron Man is massive. Iron Man one is massive too. So, yeah. Hopefully, the buzz will continue, and people will realize when they see the magnitude of 7.1 that the Cap or that the Iron Man and Thor issues are just as important.
Now, you mentioned Thor, and of course we know what happens to Thor at the end of Fear Itself. It looks like he has died.
Yeah,
and I'm kind of disappointed by the way people are reacting to it online because the character had I guess people are way too jaded about, you know, a character dying without thinking about, you know, this is, I mean, clearly he's not going to be dead forever. This is just, you know, another part of a story, and this is kind of a, you know, this is a way to hook people into kind of seeing what happens next and see what happens with Thor's story from there.
Right.
I mean, what do you think of just the way people react to, you know, to stories and the way people kind of want everything answered right away without?
Yeah, I mean, look. So that's, you know,
the story
let me answer it backwards.
Sure.
That's great. That means I'm doing my job.
Okay.
When my son turns to me and says, "What's going to happen?" and we're watching a movie, that's great. The movie's doing its job. He is hooked into the narrative, and he can't stand the narrative tension is making him so nuts. He's demanding to know what happens. Mm-hmm. That's what we do. That's our job. Like that is mission accomplished. And that said, you know, kind of online reaction is sort of like tabloid headlines at the grocery store. Like I don't set out to read them. I don't go looking. I don't read the Star or the Inquirer or the Weekly World News or whatever. But when I am at the grocery store, invariably, I will see a headline on the corner of my eye. You know, it's not, I don't really pay that much attention to it. Cause you turn into one of those guys that only wants to please everybody and then like fucking and writes by committee. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, look, I don't want to run a poll. I want to write. So, you know, that said, you like it, hate it. I don't, that's entirely your prerogative. I only ask that you, you know, read it first and let the story finish before, you know, calling out some sort of fatwa or whatever. But, you know, at this point, without these point one, two, and three issues, I use this, when I talked to Suntress the other day, but like, you remember when the dude tries to blow up the Death Star in Star Wars before Luke?
Uh-huh.
Ah, too close. Didn't go in. Just impacted on that dude. The impact on the surface, dude.
Uh-huh.
Like that's where we are. Like without these point one issues, we still kind of need like the emotional resolution of the movie. And that's, you know, but still, you know, we get these three issues will kind of finish the book as it were. So we it doesn't quite hold up when you think about it. Because like, wait a minute, it's not an emotional thing. Anyway, the Death Star has exploded, but they're not home yet. They haven't gotten the medals. The kind of the emotional moment of, you know, R2 is alive, you know, where you discover, hey, R2 is alive. He didn't get blown up. And, and look how clean they made C-3PO. And look, even Chewbacca got a medal. It's like, you know, we still have the movie's not over yet. So the pyrotechnics are done, but the story's not finished. And, you know, hopefully people are reacting and going crazy and, you know, hopefully they're digging it.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
So, you know, I got no complaints there. And, you know, the story's not done. And the 7.2, I believe it is, will answer a lot more questions as to what happens next.
Awesome. And kind of getting back onto other books. So, Fear Itself, The Fearless had started. Now, this is just a collaboration between you, Cullen Bunn, and Chris Yost. Do you do any scripting on this book, or is this... is there any particular difference to your approach to this book compared to the others?
As Colin has scripted more and more, my hands come further and further off, and I offer now sort of like editorial advice more than anything else. But at the beginning, it was very much like a writer's room where this kind of story got broken between the three of us. Me just kind of having so much to Fear Itself down and these guys, Chris and Colin coming in. But I was much more involved in the plot stuff than anything else. And now it's down to like, really, instead of what if he said which? It's like down to like little tiny, you know what I mean? That's sort of like now it's now I just kind of nitpick and stuff. But because they don't need it. But yeah, it's sort of like working in a writer's room where there's kind of three of us breaking the story of these two books.
Yeah, I'm really digging it, man. It's a lot of fun. It's pretty cool to see Crossbones kind of front and center and just doing all kinds of cool stuff. And of course, the follow-up with Sin, or I guess she is the Red Skull now, and the follow-up of her story has been pretty good so far.
Yeah, and it's cool to put a book this big and this important kind of out. And it wasn't like we sat down to figure out... oh, let's do a book starring women or anything like that. It just kind of naturally became a story about Valkyrie and Sin. So it's sort of like one of the most important books Marvel's launched this past year is a female protagonist, a female antagonist. And how cool is that? And it's Cullen doing what Cullen absolutely does best.
Yeah, I'm really happy for him, too. He wrote one of my favorite tie-in books during Fear Itself, you know, The Deep.
The Deep was great.
Yeah, that was really good. And it's nice to see him kind of continuing on Hero with the Fearless. Now, before we move on past Fear itself, Travis, did you have any other questions regarding this particular story?
No questions. I will say that I was very excited because Matt at New York had promised us that the ending of Fear itself would be straight out of Bugsy Malone, and we get in there and there was no pie fights at all.
True.
I was a little bummed out. I just feel like false advertising there, but
I am sorry that I might have misled you with my promise of musical numbers. That said, 7.1, 7.2, and 7.3.
Oh, fantastic!
Oh boy, pie fight at Cap's funeral. Okay, we briefly touched upon Thor.
Thank you for cutting me off because I was
I'm sorry.
No. I was just going to sing the whole thing.
You were going to do the whole thing, weren't you?
Genuinely, thank you for popping in there.
Well, kind of touch upon Thor real quick. The first story arc of the Mighty Thor was awesome.
Thanks.
It's big, you know, cosmic Kirby epic stuff, and I really loved it. You and Olivier just. I don't know, you guys are such a great team. I can't wait to see the next arc that you know that he ends up working on, and I can't wait. I'm looking forward to seeing how you follow up the Silver Surfer story because is he going to be in the Defenders as well?
Yeah, he's kind of a supporting character in Thor now. We get to see him get a job in Thor because he's human now and he's trying to rediscover humanity, so he has to. He applies for a job at Will's Diner.
Of course he does.
Yeah, as a short order cook. So you get to, you know, but I want to keep him kind of as a part of Broxton and that kind of weird mixture of cultures. And then, yeah, he's in Defenders too.
I look forward to seeing that.
Because he's landlocked. It's not like he can open a surf shop in Broxton or anything.
Exactly.
Like that.
Although that's a way better idea. He should have just gone to Imperial Beach and opened up a surf store. It would have been like John from Cincinnati.
I could totally see someone like him hanging out around here. I could totally see that. It would work out so well.
Yeah, and then I get to do like he and Loki get together and kind of have a little adventure in the Tanara story. So we get like Kid Loki and the Silver Surfer going around trying to get to the bottom of Tanaris and all this stuff. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, and go ahead.
I have to say that one of my favorite parts of that first arc was the Volstagg stuff. Everything did with Volstagg was absolute gold.
That was I preemptively censored myself in one of the where he was going to declare he thought that the men of, that all men of Christ were coming for him and was declaring war against the men of Christ. It was one of the things that made all of us laugh. We were like, there's absolutely no way this can run, but I wrote it and made me laugh. So maybe it was Ralph Macchio when he was still there, and Tom Brevoort, and I sent it to the two of them. Like, listen, I know this isn't going to see print. Maybe you will both enjoy it as I enjoyed it. I will fix it in the rewrite.
I can't possibly imagine who would have a problem with that.
Yeah, I know, right? Right? What's wrong with Volstagg declaring? That's to the tiny men of Christ.
I would also be remiss in not saying that my wife would kill or die to have you and Kelly Sue do a Sif and Volstagg miniseries. Just the two of them team up, go on a road trip, kind of Bing Crosby, Bob Hope kind of road trip, and just have some adventures.
Yeah. Do you know what you know the pinup artist Coop?
I do not.
Does like Devil Girls and stuff like that. You would know his work if you saw it. Super foxy, okay. like Devil Girls and stuff. We were joking, and he was like, "So when are you going to write the Volstagg Max series?" And I was like, "That's it, you and me, Volstagg Max." And like, "Oh, you Volstagg and Sif, like that'd be great." So they're in my mind, they're in my heart. So we'll see what we can do.
I'm just saying, you'd get at least two copies would be sold. One for me, one for my wife. At least two copies.
I'd buy one as well, or maybe a couple.
There you go.
Nice.
Yeah, I also enjoyed the one off. You know, the kind of the secret origin of the serpent in issue 7.
Yeah. Thanks.
It's really nice to kind of see to get a background on this particular character because you know, like I said, everything, all the big action stuff happens in the main book, and it's nice that they to devote a little bit of time to see what the story between Odin and the serpent is. Now, It's also cool to see Pascal Ferry back on the book. And the next arc, obviously, the Daenerys arc is going to be all Pascal, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Seeing the origin of the serpent, how he got cast out, how they took him out was really cool. And that last page with Odin and little Thor was probably one of the strongest pages I've seen in a while, because I'm so used to Odin since he came back being a grouchy kind of a jerk to his son, and then just seeing this nice little tender moment between father and son really kind of shows you, wait, there's more to Odin than what we've been reading, and stick around and see what Odin is really about.
Well, there was thank you for that. The idea that there's this thing that Stan Lee when he turned Thor into a Marvel character, which was rewrite the Asgardian myths as it suited him. that's some guts right there, man. Like take a 1500-year-old myth that people used to, take an entire religious culture and just rewrite it, punch it up, give it a rewrite. So like the idea of like let's retcon the entirety of the Norse myth. Let's make it all made up. Like that was the kind of thing I wanted to kind of pay homage to Stan. Like, meh, I'm gonna tighten this up a little bit. Like I wanted to what if it's all a lie? What if this happened for real? And blah blah blah. What if everything else was just a story that Odin told everyone? I wanted to do something big and show how monstrous of a threat, the serpent was, and what Odin had to go through to get rid of him once. And then there was a thing that I had trouble buying. In the JMS stuff, when Odin was like, "That's okay, you're back, you're alive, I'll stay dead," says Odin. And I just didn't, as a father, I didn't believe it. So I started to wonder, like, well, wouldn't it be interesting if there was a reason, like if Odin being dead meant something, like something worse than Odin being dead was avoided. Mm-hmm. Right? And like, so what if that was the kind of, I didn't know where I was going to get to it, but I knew I was building to it. So I knew when I brought Odin back, he was going to be pissed off because... Mm-hmm. No, I was dead. I was supposed to, there's a prophecy. He escaped. He thought he got away with it, and Thor bringing him back meant, oh, you jerk. Now it's all going to happen. And that's kind of sets him down his kind of, Kubler-Ross rage scale, where we get to see him kind of behaving angrily and coldly and distantly and everything he can to try and force events away from their inevitable, from Thor killing the serpent, taking 9 steps and dying of his wounds.
Yeah, I could totally see that now, and it makes sense because it's. Odin has a lot of people tend to misunderstand Odin, ever since he came back, and I was thinking, there was always there's a lot more going on here, and of course when you revealed everything with the serpent and fear itself started happening, you kind of start to see a better picture of the character.
Yeah, the other thing too was like no disrespect from people that don't care for my work, but I've people who complain that, you made Odin a jerk. It's like, you've read 2 JMS issues where Odin wasn't so much a jerk. I've got 400 where he is.
Yeah, and he's always been kind of...
Back in the day, he's a one-eyed dick. He's just all...
He always was. He always was. I always thought it was very consistent.
And a lot of people... So part of it was like, I just want cranky. Odin is an antagonist to Thor. He was sometimes great, but, again, he was the guy that cast Thor out. He was a kind of cranky, angry, irritable, irascible dude. So
if everyone that knows you calls you the all-powerful, you're going to be a bit of a prick.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
You just go back and look at the Walt stuff. He's a kind of cantankerous, He'll be lauding you as a hero 1 second and zapping, exiling you the next. That's just kind of the way he rolls. It's very Old Testament that way. So
he's very much into tough love.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I've been enjoying Thor. I'm looking forward to the next arc, and Daenerys is very. I'm very interested in seeing what that character is all about, seeing how the rest of the story unfolds. So, I'm not going to try to. I'm going to move on past it because I might end up trying to solicit spoilers at that point because I'm very interested. Invincible Iron Man. Iron Man was really affected by fear itself, and he did something that we were clearly not ready to see. He fell off the wagon, And he is, and he did, you know, he pretty much gave up the one thing, one of the things that he was really proud of, you know, his sobriety, so to fight this thing because it was such a major threat. Now, what made you decide to have Tony do that?
Well, I wanted to tell the story of a hero that stayed home, you know, and had to fight the Battle of Bedford Falls, as it were. And I thought, again, it was shocking to me as a reader when I thought about, what if it was Iron Man? Like, oh my God, I'd never see that. Like, especially if the dude writing Iron Man is writing the event. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You don't think he's going to be the one that basically stays home and runs the scrap drive, but he stayed home and ran the scrap drive. So, but I wanted to have him, you know, break his vows and on one hand, and have it kind of all work, like, metaphorically, you know, but the punchline is, when it looked like the world was going to end, he went out and got drunk. and now the world didn't end, so you got to deal with that. And that's kind of, that sets forth where we're going from here. And what happens when the ultimate man of science has to confront a miracle, which, you know, and miracles, we tend to assign miracles, quote, good, unquote, connotation. Like, it's a miracle. You know, it's a miracle save, the miracle on ice. It's a, you know, miracle landing or whatever, a miracle cure. But, you know, something monstrous like, oh, an entire city was turned to stone and everybody in it. Holy shit. Like, that is also a miracle as well.
Yeah, the Paris stuff was really, I thought that was, it was really creepy. It was pretty messed up.
Super dark, right?
Yeah, it really was.
I assume you have no intentions of going to Paris now.
No, I can't wait to go to Paris. that's the thing is, I love Paris.
You are the man who turned us all to stone.
I thought
it's la vie. But no, it's you know, I wanted the ultimate man of science to have to deal with a miracle, the ultimate miracle, and just to be unable to reconcile the two, that there is no scientific explanation for what happened. I'm getting drunk. So,
yeah, I thought the tie-ins, these particular set of tie-ins were some of the strongest. And you know, it helps, of course, that you're writing the event itself. But
yeah, I had a sort of, I had a guy on the inside, as it were.
Exactly. Yeah, I like how the events kind of, how stuff in Iron Man just flows right into stuff that happens in Fear itself, you know, with every cliffhanger of the issues. Particularly the last one, of course, you know, since that's when, you know, Iron Man comes up with all the new toys he brings in for the rest of the heroes.
Right, right.
And of course the Svartalfheim guys, like
the dark elves, yeah.
Dark elves, they're awesome.
Yeah, well, Splitlip is coming back, so
that's fantastic.
He begins to work at Stark Resilient. I think 5/10, he becomes an employee.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to that. That particular character was probably one of the best things to come out of the story.
It's a lot of fun to write him. They kind of have like that like element of Deadwood in the book, which is someone swear like a character from Deadwood.
See, I wasn't even thinking of Deadwood. See, that's brilliant right there.
You have to kind of imagine like a little dwarvish Swearingen.
And then, of course, during this whole affair, we're still dealing with Detroit Steel, and of course, and the Hammers. man, they were really making it really difficult for Pepper.
yeah, everybody had a bummer. I mean, that's sort of the, you know. That's drama, right? Like, like nobody wants to read, oh, and then everyone had a great day and had lunch and a snack and took a little nap. Like that's not dramatic. That's not exciting. That's coasting. So, it's hard out there, especially, you know, it is a male dominated society and women have to, not just fight the same fights, but fight against dirty tricks and stuff like that. So yeah, I wanted to kind of push Pepper into this role really hard and it keeps going. Like everything, I've been sort of diligently setting up what's basically the third act of my Iron Man run now. It starts with this next arc. It's called Demon. It starts with 5/10 and, the Hammers, Ezekiel Stane, Mandarin, they've all been working towards a singular goal and it starts now. When Tony is, here's the thing, word gets out that Tony was drunk, and they subpoena him, and they want all the biometric data that the suit records to see if there's evidence of him being drunk during the Serpent's War. So the argument being, look, if you were a commercial airline pilot and you were drunk on duty, you'd never get to fly a plane again. If you were a cop and you were drunk on duty, you'd never get to be a cop again. Why do you get to be Iron Man if you got drunk while you were piloting Iron Man?
Wow.
So the story is called Demon, and it's not a story about the relapse. The relapse was actually fairly brief in the grand scheme of things, but it's a story of recovery and what happens to Tony Stark when word gets out that he's been drinking again, or rather that he drank again just once. You know, it's all it takes is once, right?
Yes, that's right.
You get drunk once, you're in a drunk driving accident, you kill three people. Like, doesn't matter that it was my first time drinking. It was like, doesn't.
Yeah. It still happened, yeah.
Yeah. So the storyline is called Demon, and you know there are all kinds of different demons in the story because so it's a big year for everybody in Iron Man.
I thought that the way that you handled the Tony getting drunk confronting Odin, I thought it was probably the most powerful moment of fear itself, and I was really, really into it, because I know the cliche is Bucky stays dead, but for me, since the original Demon in a Bottle, the cliche is Tony stays sober. Like, nobody's really had the guts to pull the trigger on putting him back in there and having him relapse.
Well, I can't speak for everything, but I suspect, because I know nobody wanted to see that less than Tom Brevoort. So that is a trenchant observation. Tom did not want to see it and had often declared. But my story, like, I didn't want him to get drunk. I didn't want him to be drunk again. I wanted, it was like I said, it was the recovery, and that I don't think anybody had pitched before.
It's amazing.
So that was, I think, how that particularly sticky editorial red light turned green for me was that the story of him getting drunk was actually not the story.
It's really about the aftermath of Wolf.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is fantastic. And as an old school Iron Man fan, I also want to thank you very much for bringing Bethany Cave back.
And finally, I brought her back, and then I started a crossover. So she sort of showed up and then had to sit on the side. But she's got, I think one of, there's a scene in 5:10 with her, 5:10 or 5:11. I think it's 5:10. I'd have to pull up the script, but I wanted to write it for more than a year. There's a scene between her and Pepper that I knew was coming, and I wanted to write. She's very much a part of the book now, and one of our characters, and hurrah for that.
And now, new idea: Split Lip and Bethany road trip book.
I'm not disliking the ideas. These are all terrific ideas.
Now, moving past Iron Man, you're, of course, the big...
Travis, Tony and Odin have words one last time in Fear Itself 7.3.
I am there.
Yeah. I mean, we saw the cover in some of the house ads, and that looks like it's going to be an intense issue.
It's nice story. You know, I sort of that, biggest fans of the West Wing.
Yes.
You know, the,
absolutely.
The Martin Sheen yells at God episode.
Oh, okay.
Like that had to be like, I can promise you that was a lot of fun to write, because it's fun to write a character just yelling at God. It's pretty fun.
I'm looking forward to it, man. I mean, everything really, the point one, two and three issues of 7.1, 2 and 3 rather. They all look really intriguing, and like we mentioned earlier, you know, it's kind of cool that you guys kind of separate all the emotional fallout of that story into their own, you know, their own chapters within the event title itself.
Yeah, you know, there's that thing where like an event where like the penultimate issue is really the last issue, because then you've got maybe a third of your final issue that's sort of wrapping up the action scene, and then you've got 2/3 of characters standing around talking about what it all meant to them. It's always such a weird. So we wanted to just have the book be the summer blockbuster, and then kind of have these epilogues be the little art house indie movies about the damage left in its wake. So
I think it's a great separation. Can I ask the really piddling tiny fanboy question that has been on the internet?
Please.
It's about the disposition of all of the new awesome toys that Tony brings back. We get to see them there for an issue. They're awesome. We're excited for the action figures. And then they all go back in the fire, except for Red She-Hulk gets to hang on to her sword.
Yes.
And are we going to get a story explanation for
You try to take a sword from Red She-Hulk.
That works for me.
It's a big part of her character in Avengers. She's named it. It has a name. And Tony even says, like, I tried to take it from her. She wouldn't give it to me. So, you know, how much trouble can she get into? But, yeah, they just let her keep it. Yeah, so. But with Odin gone, the enchantment is gone. It is now just a big sword. So, but, yeah, so it is. But, yeah, that's ultimately. It's like, no, she's like, no, I don't think I'm giving this back. And nobody felt like arguing.
Worked for me.
Yeah, she's named it. It is her big-ass sword. And, she carries it with her now, so it's I personally want there to be a book called The Savage Sword of She-Hulk, and so when I started to fall in love with her, that was a big part of it was my big ass sword. In the first issue with Defenders, it's a line on panel. She's like, "Oh, can I bring my big ass sword?"
So speaking of Defenders, like I'm really excited for the book. Another great, I mean. I always loved that team because you know, it's got Doctor Strange, you got the Hulk, you got Namor, the Silver Surfer. It's really one of the coolest combinations of characters out there.
It's the Island of Misfit Toys, right?
Yeah.
It's really the closest that you get with Marvel to kind of like a Doom Patrol group. Just that the group that would not really fit anywhere else.
But it's like the Doom Patrol and the Justice League. You know what I mean? Like it's
absolutely.
They're hugely. Like the thing about the Doom Patrol is like, ooh, I've got a ghost. I can grow very tall.
I'm a robot.
I'm a boy who can turn into animals. Yeah, but this is like, I'm the Silver Surfer. I was born to sail the cosmic winds.
So it's more high rent Doom Patrol is kind
of what we're saying. And listen, you will find no bigger fan of the Doom Patrol than me. So it's sort of like the Doom Patrol kind of had weird dysmorphic powers. These guys are like, oh wait, you're all kind of heavy hitters. Like you're like Red She-Hulk might be new, but she's still a Hulk.
that's right.
Like she's still a Hulk. She can still warp physics. Like all right, that's pretty dope. Doctor Strange is pretty off the chain. So.
I'm completely psyched to see a Defenders book coming back that doesn't just treat the Defenders as kind of a silly joke. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like they have a purpose this time around, too, because this is also, again, fallout from Fear itself. They're going after Null, the Breaker of Worlds, which possessed the Hulk.
Right.
Now, is Bruce Banner himself going to be involved in this, or
he is in the first issue. Not Bruce, but Hulk is. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, they're separated now, of course.
They've separated, but in terms of like the jokiness of the team, like I think there's a big part of Steve Gerber's approach that kind of made his Defenders so notable was it was kind of so self-aware. And for my taste, it gets a little nasty at times. Like Gerber got a little nasty. I suspect he was not terrifically happy as a human being. I suspect maybe he wasn't happy writing comic books sometimes. I think it resonates in that book as a kind of nasty dislike of the medium and the people who enjoy it. But part of that played out in mocking the team or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I definitely get that, but it wasn't. I'm not that dude, you know, like I didn't want that. Cause I think like, I'm sorry, Doctor Strange and Hulk and Namor and Silver Surfer on a team is fucking awesome.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
Like, I'm sorry. Like, ooh, la, la, fancy lad, go read your poetry. I want to be over here. Namor and Silver Surfer punching shark men or something. So that was how the book was. Cause that's the thing. Like that was how the book was pitched to me. I wasn't a fan. Really, I mean, as I became a fan of Gerber's, I went back and reread it, and like enjoyed it like as an adult, but I was never a Defenders reader coming up. I was never a Defenders reader as a kid. I was aware of them, but I didn't really ever read any of them.
Really? Because that's where I was. As I'm an old school Defenders fan, so yeah. I was really curious about whether this was something where you were like, I want to see the Defenders come back.
No. But Axel and Tom were like, this can be a big book for us. This can be a big franchise book with the right take. And as I was kind of coming through Fear Itself, and they were like, oh, what are you going to do next? And they kept saying Defenders, and my response was always like, but I was never a fan. Like, I don't want to carpetbag my way into the book, you know? I don't want to pretend like, oh, I've read all these issues in the last 3 months or anything like that. Like, I wanted to, you know, whatever I do next, I wanted to be into. And Axel was the one who said, well, think about it like this. It's all the characters that you're going to pitch us anyway that we can't support in this marketplace right now.
But we'll just team them
like
up together.
He knew I was going to pitch Surfer, and he knew I was going to pitch Doctor Strange, like, and he knew I was going to pitch Fury. Like, he knew right off the bat. Like, I know the three books you pitch me, and we can't support him right now. So why don't you make that your Defenders? And I was like, oh my god, that's it. So I got to have all of my pieces of cake, and I had all these. You know, I started to think about Iron Fist again during Fear Itself. And suddenly I had all these Iron Fist ideas again. And I really fell in love with Red She-Hulk. I thought that character, really got into that character writing, or as brief as it was. I was like, this is a great character. Somebody could really do something with this. So, you know, it all kind of came from loving the characters rather than loving the history.
So my gigantic laundry list of nerdy is this character Defenders questions. I should just crumple that up and throw that over my shoulder is what you're saying.
I'll give you three. You can ask me three.
Oh, I mean, I think I've already got them. I kind of get the vibe of where you're going from it. But like there's so many – there's kind of like in my mind the three great Defenders eras where you've got that initial, you know, the – Namor, Silver Surfer, Doc Strange, Hulk, and then into the Nighthawk,
Nighthawk, Valkyrie,
Nighthawk, Hellcat, Valkyrie, yeah. And then into the Angel, Beast, Gargoyle years.
Right.
So my initial was like, oh, I hope he brings in all these people from all these different periods.
I can tell you this: there will be lots of folks coming around. There will be. It's Terry Dodson. It never hurts having him drawing women. And right now there's only one. Mm-hmm. And the way I started to build the team was if you were to make a map of the Marvel Universe and then to kind of draw circles of expertise, who, if you had to put together a team that covered the entirety of this map, who would be on that team?
Very cool.
So okay, I will. That is the strategic thinking, and you can kind of piece together a couple of clues. You know, sort of you can look and see. There's one particularly deficient area, for example, that's kind of a gimme. And there's some other stuff coming. And it's just I'm so psyched of the first three. I've been banging my head against four and five tonight. Four is a Doctor Strange standalone story. It's proving to be a little tricky, but I'm having a ball, right? And it's so much fun. These are some of my favorite characters. I'm finally getting to write them all together in the same place at the same time. It's a blast.
I actually have my one nerdy, is he going to show up? And that's Damon Hellstrom.
I would love for Damon Hellstrom to show up.
Okay.
That's, good answer.
That's a good clue. I'm seriously though, just the fact that you're writing Namor again is great because I always loved your take on Namor, and it's interesting now that he's splitting time between this and Kieron's book, and
yeah,
and I've never seen that character written so well all at the same time.
My line has always been that Defenders is what these dudes do on Sundays. but there's a thing, as you pointed out, this spins out of Fear Itself. At the end of Fear Itself, the Hulk, who had been possessed by the spirit of one of the worthy called Null, the Hulk crushes his own hammer, mm-hmm. which split him and Null in two. Mm-hmm. And while Hulk was free, it also meant Null was free. Null has been sort of rampaging since the end of Fear Itself, and Hulk goes to the only humans he feels like he can trust on his way underground, on his way to Hulk number one. Mm-hmm. It's up to the one dude who has a fixed address in the Marvel Universe, Doctor Strange, and asks for help. And basically, they need to get the band back together because Hulk needs help. And Doctor Strange feels guilty about, you know, the Illuminati and everything else. And Namor feels like he was screwed over. And, you know, they all have their kind of reasons for coming along. But once they go after Null and they discover what Null is hunting, they find this kind of loose thread on a sweater that threatens to kind of unravel the entirety of the Marvel Universe. And by the time the book is finished, you'll know and they'll know why everything that's ever happened in the Marvel Universe has happened. You'll know who was behind it all. You'll know who benefited. You'll know why everything that is going to happen in the Marvel Universe will happen. And you'll know how. So, you know, you got that going for it.
Excellent.
So those are the questions Defenders are grappling with.
I'm really looking forward to that book, man. When is it due out? Is it in November or?
You know, it goes to press this week, but with the holiday, I think it's December.
Okay, cool.
If it's not the end of November, it's the first week of December. But I'm not looking at a calendar, and I want to say December. So.
Okay, we'll look forward to it. Well, speaking of waiting and things that are worth the wait, I want to move on to talk about Casanova before we close up.
All right.
It's great for the book to be back. And my God, that second issue, that cliffhanger ending when we realize who, you know, when we found out who Newman Zeno really is, it was a hell of a reveal. And that whole issue of Cass just going after Luther Desmond Diamond for all of reality was pretty damn badass. It's just amazing how the characters, how Cass has kind of gone through so much shit since last time we saw him.
Right, right.
And he seems to be falling apart at this point.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's great to have the book back, and I'm loving it so far.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now this story, I love also the fact that, you know, this is a very, very dense and very thick book. I no ads and no, you know, yeah. It's totally worth the price and every month. I just can't wait to read it.
I know it's a you know it's 32 pages of story, yeah. And then so it's, you know, because it's Casanova, nothing's ever simple. So I know that it costs more than other books, but you're getting, you know, 60%. You're getting 60% more content for 25% more price.
Oh yeah, I agree, and of course you get poor Panda getting his head chopped.
Yeah, exactly, and you get raging Panda violence.
Yeah,
the second issue, best cover ever. I'm just gonna go ahead and say it.
Yeah, I
tend to agree. Gabriel is tremendously talented, and when you give him something like Panda Slaughter, he just goes to town.
And it looks like also there's just a scene that I'm surprised has never happened at a comic convention takes place in issue two.
Oh yeah, this is funny. This is the twins' idea of being funny. There's nothing in the script that says make him look like me.
I was going to ask you about that.
Nope.
Yes.
Nope, that is the twins. The whole part of the script is all about, like, listen, don't make fun of people. This isn't about, like, the scene isn't about making fun of Comic-Con fans. Like I am a Comic-Con fan. Like, this isn't about, like, self-loathing. This isn't about, like, being too cool for nerds to go to comic conventions. It's not, like, I was like, this isn't about the fat, like, crazy guy dressed up like Optimus Prime. You know that? Like, it's not that. We're not making fun of that guy. We're not making fun of cosplayers or anything like that. Like, it's not about that. It's a different thing. Like, besides, it's the Casanova universe. Everybody looks fabulous all the time. So my concern was, just don't make it, don't, you know, this isn't about making fun of our audience, you know, this is blah, blah, blah. But I never mentioned, by the way, don't fucking make him look like me. But they apparently thought they were hilarious, and, you know, it's part of our deal is, like, all right, there you go. I don't think I've ever asked for anything to be redrawn. Just as kind of a rule, like, my feeling is, like, you're the storyteller, you make this decision, and this is our collaboration. And they decided it needed to look like me a little bit, so.
You're just in it for the laugh.
I'm just in it for the laughs, motherfuckers.
Are we to assume now, though, that every script, every issue will be, please don't make this look like me?
Yeah. Dear collaborator. None of these fucking people look like me.
I also got a big laugh out of chapter 6 of issue 2, The Night Is Over. Just the way he, from the moment Cass makes his entrance and just the way he, everyone who talks.
Yeah, that was such an honest, like, God, I don't want to write another fucking bullshit action scene full of, like, quippy lines. It's so, like, those scenes are so fake and so false. It's like, oh, fuck this. That was a very legitimate yelp of artistic dissatisfaction with my own work. Like, talking in a fight scene is such bullshit.
That's actually what inspired these particular.
Yeah, no, I was just like the idea. Like, I knew he had to kill his way under the ship because we had to figure out how all those dead bodies got there. And I was like, well, it was Cass, but like the idea of writing another like zinger filled action scene, just like, fuck this. And there's this great bit in Schizopolis where Soderbergh comes home and says to his wife, "Superficial greeting." And she's like, "Superficial greeting. Inquiry is the quality of your day." It's like. Non-specific vague platitude, inquiry as to dinner. Like, this is like they have a kind of, you know, by the numbers conversation without actually having it. And it's just sort of like, I'm just going to lift that gag part and parcel, and that will be how I make this scene tolerable. And comment on all the bullshit of all the other writers in comics that, you know, fill their fight scenes with a weird homophobic nihilism and what passes for wit in some places. I don't know.
For this particular story, how many issues do we have?
It'll be 4. The page content will be the same as the other story, so it's still like 138 pages altogether, something like that. But over 4 issues, and 3 is going to be a little late. Nothing can be done. Sorry. But you know.
As long as it's coming, I don't care. You know?
Yeah, I promise. It's being worked on. It's just the boys got awful busy. So.
They've been everywhere. I can see them all over Twitter and Instagram that they've been pretty busy.
Yeah, and then there's actually a con in Rio in like a week. I'm actually going to.
Awesome.
In like 7 days, like literally a week I'm going. So, so I'm going to actually get to do a show down there with them. Get to see, how they roll in Brazil. It'll be pretty exciting.
When was the last time you guys actually got to do a con together? It was probably San Diego last year, right?
I wasn't at San Diego last year.
Was it New York last year?
And it wasn't at New York last year either. It would have been San Diego the year before, I think.
Oh, wow. That's way back. Okay. Yeah, it's been a while since you guys have been hung out then.
It's amazing they remembered what she looked like.
My brain is entirely shot. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It'll be interesting. I had it finally figured out. Like, I had my way. I could finally do it. The secret that when I first met them was, you know, you're at a con. You're wearing a name tag. I would check a name tag and then watch their shoes. So, because they look identical. They're identical twins. So now I can tell them apart by looking at their faces. But when I was trying to get those, you know, one had red, like Fabio had red shoes. I was like, all right, Fabio's the red shoes. I can keep that straight. So that was my tell was I would pay attention to the shoes.
and after the 4-issue arc, what's next? Do you guys have another arc in tap? Or
yeah, Fabio comes back for the 4th arc, and that'll start right up after the 3rd one ends. So hopefully not a very long wait at all.
Oh, that's awesome. Like I said, I've been really excited for this book and so glad that it's back because it really feels, you know, it feels something that I've always wanted to read in this, you know, a good sci-fi spy story that, you know, we don't really get much of these days in comics. So it's really cool to have this book back. So,
well, thank you. Thank you for it. That was really nice to hear. It was the first chance I ever got to write a comic. It was the first time anybody offered to let me write a comic book that had staples in it, and so I wanted to write, you know, a comic that I wanted to read. It sounds like you wanted to read it too, so that's really awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been great. Have you guys ever thought of, like, I don't know, like doing licensed products from the book? Like, I would love like a replica of that the thingy from issue 1.
Oh yeah, that'd be great, right? Yeah, sure. Somebody write me. Yeah, let's do it.
That's like a really cool thing to have, and you just like don't know what the heck that is it's supposed to be, and you're not sure. You're like, is it a lighter or something?
Yeah, it's like a lighter. I think I call it the space lighter in the script. Yeah, no, it's the thingy, you know, the little thing. I would love that'd be great. Yeah, no, somebody find me, write me. I'll sell out. I don't know. And, I want to, like Casanova stickers, like Casanova peeing on peeing stickers. Like maybe Ruby Berserko peeing on something, whatever. Little stickers that go on the back of cars, some truck nuts, maybe some Casanova Quinn underball truck nuts. Pretty great.
Yeah, that would be. I would probably buy the truck nuts.
You know, I gotta take that one to Twitter later tonight. I gotta take the Casanova truck nuts to Twitter. See if people would buy it.
All right. Well, before we close out,
I might lie on Twitter. I might pretend that I've been approached with the offer. So
now, what distinguishes those from regular truck nuts is what I'm trying to figure out.
Well, first off, they'd be hand sculpted by Gabriel Ba.
Okay. Well, there you go. I'm sold already.
I would insist with a certificate of authenticity. I don't know. Maybe they'd be like in black and white. I don't know. They'd be like,
because not for nothing. I've read every issue of the book. I've double dipped. You know, we've got the trades. We've got the single issues, but I still couldn't identify his balls as opposed to somebody else's.
Somebody else's balls.
I'm not that devoted a reader, I guess.
Sure, sure. I don't know. I'd have to ask him. I suppose maybe he can. That'd be interesting. You remember when Wizard took the they cut out pictures of female characters' butts. And we're like, identify the ass. What superheroine by her ass or whatever.
I remember that.
Jeez. It'd be great if it was just balls from Casanova. Identify the character by their balls.
Oh, man. I don't know, man.
Yeah, we refer to the undernut when there's like a low angle and Cass is running away. And you see them hanging like from your angling up. That's the that's undernut. And then, undernut and exomuffin. That is the terms on team Casanova.
I feel like I've learned a lot and grown a lot today. Thank you, Matt.
Yeah, me
too. I live to give, Travis, so...
Mission accomplished, sir. Mission accomplished.
Oh, I wish, man. I had that banner.
We could probably Photoshop that or something.
Today we talked about balls. Very excited.
Matt Fraction flew in on an airplane. It had undernuts and exomuffin. It was amazing.
Great.
Oh, man. Anyways, Matt, before we close up, where can people find you online?
Never updated mattfraction.com, which I just remembered today. I had a website. I was like, oh, shit, I should do something with that. So hopefully the soon-to-be remodeled mattfraction.com. And on Twitter, it's just me, Matt Fraction, all one word.
Yeah,
probably not safe for work if you work at a place where your boss is cool with you reading Twitter, but not cool with Twitter that has swear words in it.
Yeah, it's one of the most entertaining Twitter accounts out there. I'll vouch for that.
Thank you.
I enjoy it.
What do you see me take this Casanova truck nuts idea to the people? This is going to be great.
I'm just looking forward to seeing the reaction of people. I can't wait to see them.
People would buy it. I guarantee people are just going, really? Like, yes, really.
If nothing else, we can expect that hashtag Casanova truck nuts will be trending tomorrow.
Exactly. Listen. Yeah. Look, I love your comic, but I really love the balls.
Dear Matt, we need more balls. Love comic book people.
There might actually be a boner. We might actually have our first erect penis in an issue. We'll see.
Oh my god. Okay, that's with
maybe that's an exclusive. You heard it here first. I got
spoilers.
Okay, do you know what the have you heard of oblique strategies?
Yes.
So, you know, it's this kind of thing that Brian, you know, came up with. Brian, you know, and somebody else, I can't remember. Like, they're just kind of like cards with weird phrases on them to help jog you when you get stuck. Mm-hmm. And I got stuck on a scene and couldn't figure it out and went to Oblique Strategies. And you get like little apps, you know, you can see it online. You can kind of little JavaScript Oblique Strategies things that take the actual phrases so you can be using the same, you know, deck that Brian, you know, uses. And it said, it was either do what you wouldn't do or go dirty. I think it was go dirty, something like that. And, or make it dirty. And I'm like, well, like, all right. And so I wrote like, I wrote a boner in the scene and wrote like in the script, like, I don't even know if this needs to be here, but I'm now writing again, so that got me going at least. And let's, you know, I just, and it worked. It totally worked. It's a non, you know, it's certainly not narratively vital. But yeah, so I put it in and sent it to the boys. Like, listen, I don't know if you want to draw it. I don't even know if we can publish it. I don't know if it needs to be in here, but I wrote a boner into a scene and maybe we have to deal with it now. So
maybe that's why. Now I'm probably too late. Maybe I'm probably too late to help, but is it possible that we can do like 3D glasses with that issue and get the full effect of the boner?
Yeah, I'm not paying for 3D glasses, but maybe we can do the effect because we already did a 3D effect. Maybe we could do the 3D boner effect again. Grab your 3D glasses now. Oh my god.
Oh, you probably have to run that through oblique strategies again, and I think my favorite one out of those was always ask your body whenever it came up with something.
Ask your body.
Ask your body, or I think another one was what would your closest friend do, or something like that.
I'd ask my body. Maybe my body was like, boing. Alright.
A lot of these would come back to boner for me, really.
Just any given time.
Jeez. All right.
So anyway, so maybe Averia 3 you'll have a hard on. We'll find out.
All right, sir. Well, once again, thank you very much for taking the time to chat with us. Again, thanks for all the fun comics over the last year, and I'm really looking forward to what's coming up next year. I mean, aside from Defenders, is there any? I mean, I know you may not be allowed to say anything yet, but is there anything else we can expect from you next year that's not been announced yet? Again, you don't have to say what it is.
Yes, but I don't know when it's being announced, but it's coming, as they say. So,
all right, and once again,
thank you so much for being so into it and reading it, and thank you. This was really, it sounds like I paid you guys. I really appreciate your kindness and your enthusiasm. Thank you so much.
Well, yeah, we're just keeping it real here, Matt. I mean, we wouldn't be doing this if we didn't love the work. We didn't really love the work, and again, yeah, we appreciate all the effort you've been putting in, and also, with regards to Casanova, I just want to say also, it's pretty badass of you to keep Alejandro after what's happened. So it's
absolutely,
yeah, he's a good dude. I'm glad you guys are supporting him.
No, he's part of the family. So we'll figure it out. You know.
All right. Well,
thanks again.
Thanks, and you take care, and we will talk to you soon.
All right. Have a great night.
All right, take it easy.
Take it easy.
Before the song plays, I just wanted to make sure you're aware. Before a song is it's a little Kickstarter ad for a friend of mine, Mr. Dave Acampo. He is trying to fund his comic project, Sparrow and Crow, and he's a really good writer, really smart writer actually, and a really good dude. I wanted to help him out, so I had him record this little bit here at the end and to kind of pitch his project to you. If you are interested in what he talks about, be sure to stop by the link, the Kickstarter link on the show notes for this. And if you want to give whatever you want to donate to the cause, you're welcome to do so. Dave's a good dude, and I wanted to help him out. So, that's pretty much it. Enjoy, and see you next week.
Hi, folks. I'm Dave Acampo, and you may know me as the co-host of the Fuzzy Typewriter podcast with my friend Paul Montgomery. Prior to that, I was actually the co-creator and executive producer of Wormwood, a serialized mystery. This was a full cast audio drama that ran from our website, wormwoodshow.com, and also on iTunes for the past few years. We wrapped that up last year, and since then we've been working on further expanding that universe and those characters that have become very popular. And that's why I'm actually talking to you today. We are launching a Kickstarter campaign to help us with production costs and marketing costs associated with our new comic book miniseries. Sparrow and Crow, The Demoniac of Los Angeles, is a five-part original comics miniseries that is going to be published by Hermes Press in the spring of 2012, but it is a creator-owned venture. We are trying to raise money to help us produce this comic in the way we know best, in the way we want to do it. So we need your help. If you're into horror comics, if you are into mystery comics, crime, noir, if these words mean anything to you, if they hit a button for you, then you definitely want to check out our website, sparrowandcrow.com. Crow has an E at the end of it, so it's sparrowandcrowe.com. These are our characters, Dr. Xander Crow, once a psychologist of great prominence who had tragedy befall him, and he started to investigate the dark pathways of the occult, and now he works as sort of a washed-up occult exorcist, traipsing around Los Angeles with his partner, the sardonic goth hacker named Sparrow, who helps him set up jobs. And this is all about Sparrow and Crow getting mixed up with LA's mob boss, Don Marino, when his daughter becomes possessed by an entity that is all too familiar to Crow. This is a lot of fun. We're very excited about it. It came to us through artist Jared Souza, who approached us as a fan of the Wormwood show and was curious about adapting it. So Jeremy Rogers and I, the co-creators of Wormwood, we started thinking about what other stories we could tell and settled on this. We put together a pitch book based on Jared's art and our writing, and we landed our publisher, Hermes Press. So if I could ask anything, it would just be that you visit sparrowandcrow.com. Remember, that's Crow with an E. And you check out our Kickstarter video where we explain the concept probably better than I'm doing right now. And you get to see some of the artwork. You can read more about the story, and then you can click through to our Kickstarter campaign. This is not just giving us money to help us produce this comic book. We have great rewards. We have signed copies of the book, signed scripts. We have art prints. We have art pages. We have original pages from the comic book. Hermes Press has stepped in and donated some of their great hardcover reprint books. So there's a lot of great stuff. And really just check out the site and see if you can help us in any way. And I thank you very much for your time.